Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is E. Marcel Portude. Hope everyone's had a good few days out there. We're going to preview the weekend and look at some things that happened in the past few days. First thing we're going to talk about, we're going to go over the NBA. I did my power rankings last night, so I'm going to go over those with you on the broadcast. Also going to do my NHL rankings, giving you my first thoughts on the NHL season so far. Also going to talk about some things that I've been interested in the past few episodes that I haven't been able to touch on. And finally, I'm going to have another addition to Ruffling My Feathers. Hopefully it's not as aggressive as my last one was on Jay Paterno, but I think it's going to be a topic that we've actually touched on previously in the past few podcasts, and I just saw another glaring example of my opinions on it. So right now, we're going to get leaded on to some of my NBA thoughts here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. So we're at the natural halfway point of the NBA season. Actually, I think we're beyond the 41-game mark, you know, of the NBA season so far. But this weekend is All-Star Weekend. We're going to be, or this is going to be taking place in Houston, Texas. So obviously, it's a good midway point to look at what's been going on in the season so far. The next podcast that's going to be out probably Sunday evening, Monday morning, I'm going to do my first half MVP, all NBA teams, defense player of the years, and et cetera, my awards. But right now, I'm giving you my top 10 rankings of the team so far in the first half of the season, as well as just some general thoughts on the team as well. So right now, my number one team is the San Antonio Spurs. First team to reach 40 wins this season, another outstanding season by Greg Popovich and the crew. Interesting thing about them so far is that they've actually strategically rested the big three of, you know, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili throughout the season, and have actually been able to get numerous impressive wins. Matter of fact, last week, all three guys sat out at Chicago and actually pulled out the victory. So Parker's also playing at an MVP level once again. The past 2 years, he's really elevated his game to a higher level. Biggest difference, though, with this team, and why have him number one, and there are going to be arguments for the other two teams, number two and three in my rankings, the continuing bench or the role players besides the big three has been outstanding. Kawhi Leonard's really elevated his game to a higher level. Thiago Splitter, him and Duncan have been really outstanding playing together in the post. And then you have Matt Bonner coming off the bench. Steven Jackson makes some excellent contributions as well. And Neal as well. It's an outstanding overall team. Right now, they're looking really good in the regular season. I'm going to get to a trade scenario, which I think will make them potentially favorites in the Western Conference. But right now in the regular season, I'll give them number one. Number two is obviously the Miami Heat. LeBron James playing at the highest level of his career. His streak actually ended of his 30 points and 60% shooting from the field. I think it ended at five games. He was trying to go for the sixth straight game of that. But the guy's still averaging close to 30 or over 30 the entire streak of the past few weeks. And he's playing at a high level. I'm not going to get into the Jordan comparisons and everything like that, but right now he's the runaway winner for most valuable player and best of the generation right now, I think. But as far as the Heat's championship aspirations, the two things that have been really good for them as well, Dwayne Wade's health has been very well. I mean, LeBron's been on this incredible streak, and people are talking about that, but Wade looks like his knee is finally right, and he's ready to make a major contribution to the team. Chris Bosh as well, his efficiency has been really good. Playing that third scoring role is more difficult than people give him credit for. The guy's used to, when he was in Toronto, averaging 20 or more points per game. But now he's really taking his role very well. It gives him at least a little bit of inside scoring and can hit the outside jumper as well. But if the Heat really want to get to that championship level, the defense, which when it's at its peak is one of the best in the entire league, they have to continue at that level. A lot of people talk about the scoring and how well they're doing, but the defensive aspect has to, you know, really get better. And that's where you see teams like Indiana take advantage of them inside the post defense. Perimeter defense, they're outstanding, you know, but the post defense is an issue. But right now they're number two, you know, on my list. And if Ray Allen also can get some better scoring as well, he's missed a lot of open three-pointers. Even last night, he missed the one or two open three-pointers that he wouldn't normally make. If he starts making those, the Heat are going to be your champion. Number three, I have the Oklahoma City Thunder. Durant and Westbrook show. Those guys have, you know, contributed very well. I'm hard on Westbrook. I would like to see more of his point guard skills, you know, develop. But, you know, he still gives you a lot of good scoring, you know, from that spot. Durant, LeBron James is the better overall player, I think. But as far as pure scoring, Durant's the best in the league. So the Thunder are number three. They've lost like six straight now to Miami, which is difficult. And they're probably going to face them in the finals if they make it back there. But as far as the regular season goes, them and San Antonio are really right there in the Western Conference. Speaking of the Western Conference, another team, the Clippers, have number four. Best bench in the league when you have Bledsoe and Jamal Crawford and Matt Barnes come off there and Lamar Odom even making some major contributions. Their team is 10 deep. And I haven't even gotten to Chris Paul, who is my, right now when I do my All-NBA first team, he's definitely going to be the point guard. The guy is, you know, the best leader in the NBA, distributes the ball, very good shooter, leads the league in steals once again, outstanding overall player. Blake Griffin has really improved his outside game as well, seeing a lot of jump shots, seeing a lot of post-up moves. Obviously, he brings the power with his dunks. And even DeAndre Jordan, who knows his limitations, he's not out there shooting three-pointers, made some nice hook shots even last night, even using the left, he's a lefty, but using both hands, you know, as far as the post moves. If they can continue to improve their defense as well and don't fall in love with the jumpers, they're going to be right there with Oklahoma City and San Antonio. That shows you the depth of the West. I mean, they're my number four team in my power rankings, but they're number three within their own conference. So right there, you're going to see this. I think you see the Clippers doing very well. Nuggets, I have number five, best home team in the entire league. When they have Gallinari going and Kenneth Faried and even Iguodala and a lot of those guys and Lawson, when they're flowing and rolling and even getting some good contributions off the bench from JaVale McGee on post, they're almost unbeatable at home. Even on the road, they take that show to a high level. They're kind of like the lower level Clippers, kind of what the Clippers are doing. The Nuggets are right there as far as having, as using multiple players and interchangeable parts, you know, within the roster. I really like what the Nuggets are bringing to the table. And speaking of the Nuggets, the team that they're trying to surpass for home court advantage, at least in the first round of the Western Conference, is actually my number 16, Memphis, who I think by the end of the season are really going to show some regression overall because of that Rudy Gay trade. I love the big guys down there, Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. Conley, I can, you know, is okay. I could do with or without. But Rudy Gay really gave him that slasher, that guy who can get some buckets on his own on the perimeter. And since they've traded him, they've been a 500 team without him. You know, so I really did not like that trade overall for them. I understand the finances of the trade and how they were trying to get under the luxury tax for the future. But as far as contending right now, they were a potential dark horse NBA Finals team just because of that inside presence. But right now, they're still going to make the playoffs. They'll be a 6 or maybe 7 seed. But I really don't see much further with them. But right now, they're my number 6 team. And my number 7 team, I think, is the biggest threat in the East to take out the Miami Heat. It's not the Celtics, not the Knicks, actually the Indiana Pacers. They're my number 7 team. I like Paul George and, you know, I like Hill. Roy Hibbert inside, David West. The reason I say that they're the biggest threat to the Heat right now is their physicality inside the post players. The only way you're going to beat Miami is if you slow the game down, out-rebound them, and get inside scoring. And the Pacers do all of that as well as statistically probably play the Bulls play the best defense, I guess, in the NBA if you look at the stats. But Indiana's right there as well, you know, overall with them. So that's why I have the Pacers at 7. I have the Knicks at 8. As far as the most entertaining series against Miami in the playoffs, potentially, it definitely will be the Knicks with Carmelo Anthony scoring close to 30 points per game. Yeah, the multiple three-pointers. The biggest problem they've had this year, though, is they've become a slower team trying to incorporate Amari Stoudemire and Iman Shumpert. When they were without those guys, they really ran at a fast pace, shot a lot of three-pointers, didn't turn the ball over, and really did well. But with the incorporation of those two guys, and also Raymond Felton's injuries, he's been struggling to stay on the court at times, and the over-reliance on Jason Kidd at that point spot, I think that's really starting to catch up with them overall. But as far as the Knicks being their top 10 NBA team in my power rankings, but so they're really doing well. The problem is with them, they would be higher if you can get Chandler, Anthony, and Stoudemire to play together. I don't know what the problem is. I guess those are guys who need the ball. Well, Chandler really doesn't need the ball so much. But as far as using the clog in the middle, I don't know if Stoudemire and Anthony, I guess those are the two main guys on the offensive side. They struggle when they're on the court together because both of them like to have the ball multiple seconds on the shot clock to work with. And you're starting to see when they're on the court together, the offense often slows down. There's a lack of flow and a lack of passing. And a lot of the passing is what leads to the three-pointers, which is what the Knicks thrive on. So they need to find that balance in the next few weeks if they really want to make that step to the next level. Number 9, I have the Warriors. Golden State's had an outstanding season. Steph Curry and David Lee have stepped their games up to a high level. Really would love to have seen Steph make the All-Star team on the roster. He's going to be in a three-point contest. But I've been following that guy since his Davidson days. I'm dating myself when I worked in Charleston. And I knew that guy would be a really good player. He can always shoot. And if you have one elite skill in the NBA, whether it's rebounding, defense, passing, shooting, you'll find a spot in the league. But he's elevated his game to a really high level, especially on the ball handling side. He's really taken to being a good point guard as well. But the problem with the Warriors, they had their 0-4 road trip. That was really a little setback for them. Andrew Bogut trying to incorporate himself as well into the lineup. The defense is going to be their biggest issue in the rebounding. They have scorers on the team. They have probably three guys on that team who can give you 30 points in one night. You have Curry, David Lee, Klay Thompson. You know, they're really good. Even Harrison Barnes, I think, at moments, and he can, I don't know if he gets to 30, but he can give you a good 20 per game. But they got to play better defense. And Bogut coming back and center helps with that. He gets rebounding. He's a good, rugged player. But overall, they're going to have to improve on some of that as well if they want to get above the sixth position in the Western Conference, which is where they're at right now. And number 10, the Celtics. Rajon Rondo's been out, but the Celtics have carried on and played really well. They're fortunate, had some less superior teams coming in and had a nice homestand to get with Rondo and getting used to not having him. They've actually seemed like they've played a little looser. Still playing a good defense, but Rondo, outstanding point guard as well, but he does control the ball a lot in their offense. At times gets stagnant. So they're passing the ball a little bit better. Paul Pierce is playing arguably his best basketball since their title season a few years ago. And Garnett, he's still holding on strong. The injuries are really starting to hurt them, though. Rondo's out. Barbosa, he hurt his knee. He's out for the season. Sullinger, he has his back injuries re-flared up, so he's out for the season as well. So the depth is really being tested for the Celtics. I didn't really expect them to do much as far as the postseason. But for the regular season right now, they're holding their own as far as the top 10. Other general NBA thoughts, I didn't mention the Lakers. That drama is just too much. The Dwight Howard issue, he just needs to make a decision if he wants to stay or go. And I'm tired of hearing from him and Kobe Bryant, D'Antoni, family members. They just need to resolve that. I know it's good fodder for the internet and the cable stations to talk about. But if you're looking for a pure basketball sense, they're not a playoff team. You saw that when they got thrashed by the Clippers last night, that they just don't play enough good defense and they turn the ball over too much. It really comes down to simple things. Even with Gasol in there, if you don't play defense and you turn the ball over, you're not going to win a lot of games. And if you don't win a lot of games, you're not going to be a playoff team. And if you don't make the playoffs, obviously you're not going to win a championship. So that's a reality when it comes to the Lakers right there. Derrick Rose, I really think he needs to I'm glad he's taken the initial step of possibly sitting out this regular season for the Bulls. That was even before he tore his ACL in the playoffs last season, he already had leg issues. And when the way he plays, you know, with his aggressive play as far as driving to the basket and the lateral movements, he has to be really careful, you know, with his knee. I know the fans out there in the Bulls Nation would love to see him out there, and they think they have a shot of maybe even making a run in the postseason. But that's your franchise player. He's going to be around for multiple years to come. The Bulls are still a very solid team. I think the best defense in the NBA. Luol Deng's done a really good job of stepping up his offense, and Joakim Noah has been outstanding in the post, making his first All-Star appearance. I mean, I like the Bulls as a team, and obviously having Derrick Rose at full strength would make them a contender, but I don't think it's worth the risk of him re-injuring the knee or messing with his other leg or his leg issues in overall. And it's tough to just go into the middle of the season and go from 0 to 100, especially when you're trying to make a postseason run and the regular season gets towards the end. So I'm glad he's taking the precautionary steps of maybe sitting out this season, you know, for the future. But I mean, it would be fun to see him out there and doing really well. But you got to think about the overall picture. And my last thoughts is down here in Atlanta, biggest rumor right now is Josh Smith and his overall lack of happiness with the Hawks, whether it's the coaching or the potential of not him receiving a maximum contract deal. I've heard the rumor trades for him to the Spurs. And if you put Josh Smith through, for as talented as he is, on both ends of the floor, his athleticism and defense are very high levels. His shot selection and just general basketball IQ or just understanding of the game has always been lacking ever since he came into the league. You put him on the Spurs with a guy like Greg Popovich and with that roster, and he would not get away with half the stuff he does down here with the Hawks. And you get him down there with the Spurs, and he can even be a starter, put him next to Duncan. Between him, Duncan, and Splitter as your front court, that's going to be your Western Conference champion if they make that move, you know. But we'll see what happens with that, you know, overall. So, first half of the season has been very good. We're going to do a lot more NBA over the next few weeks as we get towards the playoffs and everything like that. So I'm really excited about what I've seen from the league so far. If you have any thoughts on the NBA or just want to chat with me, you can always hit me up on Twitter at the Sports Inquirer, or go to my website, thesportsinquirer.net, or even give me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. So those are my overall NBA thoughts here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. You know, also, with all the NBA talk that's been going on, we forgot about the NHL, which was just a quick backstory. When I was growing up back in New York, my two favorite sports when I was coming up were actually hockey and baseball. Those are my two sports of interest before I got into the NBA. Right now, I follow the NBA a lot more, and being down here in the Southeast, college football has become a big interest. But I always have original love for football and baseball as far as sports that I'm interested in. So with the NHL lockout that took place and all the drama that took place there, I really ignored it and didn't even think about it. But since the NHL is back and we are, you know, back in activity, I actually, for the past few days, I've actually been able to sit down and see some stuff that's been going on with the league overall and seeing the quality of play and, you know, get some rankings going. So once again, I did some rankings for the NHL. I'm going to confuse my NHL and NBAs. I need to focus more. So, all right. So we're going to do my NHL rankings going on right now. First off, I'm going to go with the Chicago Blackhawks. They're undefeated so far. Well, technically not undefeated. They haven't had a loss in regulation yet this season. And you can really see even last year. I mean, the Hawks had a, you know, they won a Stanley Cup a few years ago. And you could tell they had like that post, you know, post Stanley Cup hangover going on. But you can see right now that they're playing really well. Patrick Kane would be my heart winner right now, my MVP choice. If I had to pick one, he's playing at a high level. They're a second top two or three on offense and defense, you know, in the NHL. So that's just some overall domination there. Corey Crawford has been really good behind between the pipes for them as well. So, I mean, they're not going to stay undefeated the whole season, of course. And they're going to have some hiccups. But they got a nice little homestand coming up here. And we're a quarter of the way through the NHL season. So you really can start looking at the postseason picture and seeing where these guys are going to be. Right now, I have number two, the New Jersey Devils, who just continue to churn on. I thought with the losing of Eliash to the Wild, they would struggle on the offensive end. Not Eliash, the Zach Parise, good Lord. All right, so but right now I have the Devils number two. Martin Brodeur is playing at a very high level on between the pipes as well. A lot of good goaltending from him. David Clarkson has really improved his offensive game and increased that as well. So they're really finding more balance in the offense as far as the scoring. And with the Devils, you know they're always going to play some solid defense. And if they have Brodeur, and if he continues his play, they're going to be right up there in the Eastern Conference. Number three, I have the Boston Bruins. Not the most glamorous team right now. And I really was concerned, and I think the Bees fans as well, with Tim Thomas's sabbatical or taking time off. I don't know what he's going on right now, but he's sad. He's sitting out this season. But Tuukka Rask has been really good at goaltending for them, you know, as well. And when you have Zdeno Chara and those other guys, they have a balanced offense as well. They look like they're going to be right there, as you know, when the postseason comes along. Number four, I have the melodrama known as the Vancouver Canucks. Philadelphia historically always has the goaltending issues, but the Canucks take it to another level. And I mean, we know about the Kesslers, and we know about the Sundin twins, and even them offensively, they've actually underperformed by their standards offensively, you know, this season. Once they get that going, they're really going to be another contender in the West. But back to the goaltenders, once again, it's the Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo drama going on. They went into the season, said Schneider was the guy. He struggled a little bit. Now they're putting Luongo in there, and now they're pretty much just flipping a coin, it seems like, before every game to see who they'll go with. By the time this broadcast, they'll probably come out with a statement saying they support one guy over the other. Oh, and by the way, Luongo has been on the trading block for about 2 years now. I've seen him traded to the Maple Leafs, to the Panthers, Hurricanes even. I've seen a lot of stuff going on, him being traded to all these different teams, yet they still keep on winning. So if they can figure out that goaltending situation, I personally just go with Schneider. I think Luongo's time has come and gone with the Canucks. But I guess you figure with a short season, they want to have both guys in there, and they'll figure it out in the offseason. But right now they're number four. The old men, the number five I have are the Ducks of Anaheim. Teemu Selanne, the guy contemplated retirement, you know, coming into the season. And right now he's leading in points and assists, you know, with the squad. So obviously he's playing at a high level as well. And Saku Koivu, they have a lot of good offense on that team as well. So they're number five. Number six, I have the Pittsburgh Penguins. We all know about Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, who, if Crosby's not the best player in the league, Malkin is right there as well. James Neal can score as well. No, they got good scoring, and I like Andre Fleury as goalkeeper. He's a Stanley Cup winner himself, so you know he's got that pedigree. There just seems something missing with the Penguins. I guess when they lost that back-to-back to the Devils, that home-and-home, like last weekend, that just left me sour. And I've seen the stories of them needing more scoring and the trade rumors. Everyone needs more scoring. But if they can get more offense, I think they're really going to take it to a high level as well. Number seven, if I did this ranking about 2-3 weeks ago, I would definitely have had the Sharks number one. I mean, it started off 7-0-0. you know, to begin the year. And Marla was averaging 2 goals a game, you know, for the first few. But ever since then, they've taken some steps back. They're 0-3-3 since, as the time of this podcast has been recorded. And Thornton has really struggled offensively. Marlowe hasn't been bringing as much as he did earlier in the year. So I think that's really left them a little bit lacking. But they're still number 7 in my rankings, just ahead of number 8, Detroit Red Wings. You would think with the retirement of Nicholas Lindstrom, they would really have some struggles on the blue line. They've actually done well on the blue line so far. I mean, Lindstrom is a Hall of Famer that's going to be tough to replace, even when he was playing in his late 30s at that high level. But I think they found a good, they've done well with that. Howard is a really good goalkeeper. And with all of their players, with Zetterberg and you know, all of their superstar scoring, the one person I didn't think would be leading the league or leading the team in goals is Damian Bruner, who is an undrafted Swiss player, you know, that they find. Once again, the European pipeline of the Red Wings is at a high level. I mean, it's to the point where when I was doing my research, I could hardly find a picture of the guy, yet he leads them with 6 goals scoring. So, you know, with the Red Wings, they're going to be right there in the postseason chase as well. I don't know if they have Stanley Cup winning talent on the team, but it's, you know, Babcock's an excellent, you know, coach as well. They're going to be right there. Number 9, my Maple Leaf fans, my Canadian brethren, should be happy that the Maple Leafs are finally playing at a good level. They've, I think, won 6 games undefeated so far. They haven't dropped too many points. A top 10 offense. And the Maple Leafs, for those of you who aren't big hockey fans out there, perennial disappointment, because they have arguably one of the biggest financial structure, or the best financial structure in the league. Toronto is, you know, is a top 5 NHL market. They get a lot of attention. They have a lot of money to spend. It just seems the ineptitude in their general managers and their drafting over the years has really hurt them. But it seems like they're slowly getting it together and becoming a good team. If they could at least make the playoffs, they haven't been a playoff team in years. And that's just sad enough right there that you have an original 6 franchise not even be a playoff team. That's unacceptable. But I really like their goaltending. James Reimer has been doing really well. He hurt his knee. I think he sprained a MCL or a PCL. I'm not a doctor, but they say he's going to be out maybe a week or two. The sooner he can return, you know, for the team overall, is going to be the better for them. And then finally, in number 10, I have the Blues, who are dealing with some goaltending issues as well. With Halleck, he's been hurt, I guess, with a groin injury. He's been out a few games. But if they get him back, and with the Blues, they're really the one surprise teams last season. If they get him back and they can improve their play, Hitchcock is going to have them going really well, and they're going to be a threat in the West as well. But honestly, when it comes to the postseason with the NHL this season, it's all about just making the playoffs. If you make the playoffs, that's when you're really going to make a big run, because if you're 1 or 8, the way the season's going, if you get a hot goaltender, you get some good defense, some timely scoring, you're going to be right there. So I think the goal for a lot of these teams right now is just make the postseason. Just some other general thoughts as well. I want to have my Rangers in the top 10, but they got to improve their power play. I mean, they have one of the, I think, the second worst power play in the league. If you have that, and you got to do better than that to be in the top 10. I do like how Rick Nash is looking, though. I think he's getting out of Columbus, and being on a big stage has really worked wonders for him. The one person I haven't mentioned yet, you would think with all of this NHL talk, is Ovechkin, who I had to go all the way to the 40s to find him as far as the top scorers in the league as far as goals scored. And the Capitals are honestly the worst team in the league, one of the worst teams, but they have the least amount of points right now. And Ovechkin not scoring, you can obviously see, is a big reason for that. I also think the Kings are going to be a top 5 team by the end of the season. They had a long layover from winning the Stanley Cup. I'm sure there was a lot of partying and a lot of distractions coming into the season. But right now, they're starting to get their legs with them. And when you have Quick, you know, as a goalkeeper, and their depth on the blue line and their balanced scoring, you're really going to see them improve, I think, as well. And honestly, and one last thing with Philadelphia, just to stick with Broskalov. It seems like every time I do my NHL research and watching the games and seeing my highlights, Raskolnikov is getting pulled or there's some drama, he lets in a goal and everyone wants to bench him. But if you think Brian Boucher, the journeyman, is going to be your answer at goalkeeper in Philadelphia, they got another thing coming. They need to get better scoring. They need to get some of their guys to step up and improve on that. And I think goaltending actually is one of the least of their problems. I think Raskolnikov has done a decent job between the pipes for them. So those are just some NHL thoughts that I have so far. Obviously, I'm going to do a lot more NHL. Since football is over, I'm going to transition from NFL and college football talk and get to more of some of these other sports, including the NHL. So those are my general thoughts right now here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. You know, I found it interesting also, and I'm going to get to my things I've been, you know, thinking about the past few episodes. Going to SI.com, one of my favorite references as far as news, and seeing the swimsuit issue coming out, or I guess it's out right now. I haven't been able to go to the bookstore and check it out. I remember when I was younger, there used to be appointment, you know, I talk about appointment television. It's like, oh, that's a show I cannot miss. Back when I was younger, back in the 90s, or even the late 80s, that was appointment activities right there. That swimsuit issue coming out, that was the biggest thing that I looked forward to as a young man. And now with, I guess, the internet and different, like the Maxims and obviously some other, you know, adult content, I guess, that's out there, the swimsuit issue is really taking a back step, or, you know, a back seat, excuse me, you know, to it overall. And I mean, the pictures were out, and they have improved the digital site. And in my journalistic research, I looked at most of the pictures, and for analysis for the podcast, that was my only reason for looking at all of those bikini pictures. But no, seriously, looking at it overall, I mean, obviously the visuals are very nice. I'm a big fan of Dutch field hockey right now, and I highly recommend that you check those pictures out of the Dutch field hockey team. It makes me want to move to Amsterdam immediately. But back to the story overall. I really think that I need to ask some of my younger listeners or just younger people if they even knew that it was out there. I personally didn't even know the issue was coming out until I saw some of the pictures and was, you know, and as I looked at them and I see some of the athletes, and I mean, obviously we know some of the celeb, and I know some of the people like the Kate Upton's, and you know, because she's become very popular, and Christy Teigen. The only reason I know about her is she dates one of my favorite musicians, John Legend, so I know of her. You know, but a lot of the other people on the, you know, that are in there, I really was unfamiliar with. And back in the day, there were like the Tyra Banks out there, and you know, and some other ones, then Cindy Crawford's, and you know, other ones that you like. There was a point like you knew the names, and it was like a big deal to be in the issue. And now it seems like there's been a little bit of a dip in that. So, I mean, as I checked out the issue, it was, you know, done really well. But as I said, it was just interesting to see that I didn't even notice it coming out until it actually was out. When I said, you used to mark down the days. I mean, even, I remember, just quick story, back in high school, we used to get Sports Illustrated in our school library. We used to get all the magazines, Time and Newsweek and, you know, other things like that. And we get Sports Illustrated and Sporting News and general things like that. But it was always the big debate is what to do with the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. And every year, we never got to see it in the school, which I guess is understandable looking back on it. But that was always a big drama of, like, not getting it. But then you also would just go to the magazine stand and purchase it. And as a 12 or 13 year old is like, yes, this is something I can buy. I don't need a parent or any permission. I can see all of these pictures. And I used to get really excited about, you know, seeing what was out there. I mean, I was a young man and going through some things. So now as an adult, and I guess just with the access to a lot of the things on the internet and just living life as a man, the appeal seems less. So I don't know. If you're a young guy out there, and I just need to ask them, I have some young family members in my circle, and I need to ask them about what they think of it. And the other story that I saw, just a little bit outside the periphery, but it also kind of ties into sports, is the in New Jersey, the Borgata Hotel in Atlantic City, one of the more known hotels in the East Coast. They're actually going to allow gambling in the actual hotel rooms via the televisions. Now, back in my past days, I wasn't a degenerate gambler, but I would look at a football line or two. So I knew about spreads and over-unders when I was about 10 or 11. So that kind of tells you how much I know about the world of gambling. I've never been a big casino gambling guy. I guess I'll do some roulette, maybe play some craps and things like that, or some poker, maybe some blackjack. I mean, it's not really important for me. I like it, but I really don't hit up the casinos a lot. I mean, we have some good ones around the country. But the fact that you can gamble in your room just takes away from the essence of it. The whole point of besides winning, and I guess the excitement of win and loss and the rush, as far as casino gambling is being around the other people, and it's getting that and overall energy and that vibe. And if you're just sitting in your room, I guess I have to do some research on what type of games you can play, but I'm assuming it's a lot of the online. You see about online poker and the blackjacks, and you can play some baccarat. You play a lot of stuff online. I'm assuming it's some of that stuff. Why would you even go to the hotel to do that? And the whole point of being in the hotel and casino is to play, interact with some friends and family, get a few drinks, talk to the dealers. Just get the vibe of the casino. If you have not stepped in a casino and seen all the tables and the roulette, you know, wheels going and the slot machines and all that going together, I don't understand what the point of it is to even participate in the gambling activity, you know, if you're going to go to the hotel. But I guess ties into sports as well. We're starting to see more online gambling as far as betting on games, and you know, maybe that's just an effect of it. People aren't attending sporting events as much as they used to. They're participating more at home because with the increase of the internet, they have more access to information. Maybe people feel like that with gambling as well. As far as the online poker, you have professionals out there who play strictly online for poker. And once again, poker's another one. You get your friends and your buddies, you gather around, get some food and drink, and you know, talk about things. That's the whole point of poker, is to be interactive and get to play amateur psychologists and see all your friends' faces and their mannerisms, see their tells. Yet people are very comfortable sitting in front of a computer and playing things like poker and the blackjack. So I guess with that, you know, with that increase, the hotels are responding to that, to allowing that option within their rooms. But my theory is, if you're going to go all the way over to a hotel or a resort, you know, just to gamble, why would you just sit in your room? You stay at home. Don't spend all of the money for to pay for the room, pay for the tips and all of the other things. So I saw that story and I just found it interesting, and kind of seeing how maybe sports ties into that. So that's my thoughts on that overall. So now we're going to conclude the show with something that's been ruffling my feathers for the past few days. So on my last podcast, I made a big deal about the Jadeveon Clowney theory of him participating in college football this season overall, and some theories of how he should sit out this season and avoid injury, because he's going to be most likely the number one overall pick in the NFL draft in 2014. And there's been banter about that, of if he should sit out, if he should actually play. My alternative was him to look at some other football leagues, as far as the CFL or the there's a United Football League in America, in North America as well, that he should contemplate and maybe look at as well. But overall, my thoughts were in the end is like, yeah, maybe he should play and improve his stock, because there are improvements that he can make, you know, overall as a player. Well, I might have changed my theory on that, seeing the recent developments of Norlens Noel, who was the outstanding center for the Kentucky Wildcats and arguably the number one prospect for this upcoming NBA draft in a few months. Well, unfortunately, he tore his ACL playing at Florida earlier this week. Now, we are all familiar, if you're listening to this podcast, familiar with the NCAA rule or an NBA rule that you have to be out of high school at least one season before you can enter the NBA draft. About 5 years ago, Noel most likely would have headed straight to the NBA draft, and he may have suffered the same injury. However, he would have had his NBA deal, signed a contract, and would have been paid for it. Now, with this injury, while he has a really good chance of recovering, and I see the draft analysts are still saying he's going to be a top five pick, and that his stock isn't affected, you know, by the injury, he still has a long road to recovery, and recovering from a knee injury is never guaranteed. If I was a prep player of his level, I probably would not go to college. And now that sounds kind of sacrilege around here, as far as going to college, getting an education, and you know, college is very important. But the reason you go to college is to improve your prospects for your professional career, whether it's become in the medical field, legal field, engineering, science, writing, English. I've always said, my background is in journalism and English. If after high school I was given the opportunity to be a staff writer for Sports Illustrated, I wouldn't have gone to college. I would have taken that opportunity immediately, because I would have reached the peak of what I'm trying to achieve. You can't deny a professional or an adult, man or woman, the opportunity to pursue their career professionally in the highest level. Now, going back to Noel, if he doesn't go to Kentucky, what are the options? And people are like, oh, he has no choice. He has numerous options. He could have gone and played in Europe, like Brandon Jennings did a few years ago. He played in Europe for one season, earned financial compensation, and then he ended up getting drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks and is still playing in the league and is a very productive player. So he had that option. He could go to the developmental league, play there, and people are saying, oh, it's only $30,000, $35,000 if he plays in the NBDL, NBADL. While that's not as much as the millions that he can make as a top five pick, it's better than nothing that he's receiving at Kentucky. And save all of the emails as far as, oh, he's getting paid by Kentucky or Calipari, or he's an elite athlete, he's already getting paid. I don't know about all of that stuff. I have my own theories on how much college players should be paid and if they're getting paid under the table. But the reality is, we have a young man who has just suffered a major knee injury and may not receive the same compensation he would have if he was able to just play straight into the NBA after high school. So when we look at things like Jadeveon Clowney, and he scoffs it off and laughs it off and says he's going to play, you know, South Carolina, and Steve Spurrier, his college football coach, is like, that's ludicrous that he would even consider that. Or a lot of these other analysts are saying, well, look at all of the bad stories, the Corleon Youngs, the, you know, guys that really went straight into the NBA and didn't make it. There are guys who played 4 years of college and went to the NBA and didn't make it. It's not the responsibility of us or the league to cover up the mistakes of their own general managers and owners. the league messes, if a team messes up and picks a high school player and they don't pan out, that's their problem. But then look at the Dwight Howards, the Kobe Bryants, the Kevin Garnetts, Tracy McGrady, and, you know, going back a little bit and so forth, who made it to the NBA and had various degrees of success, and you would consider them having successful careers in the league. So why would you deny anybody as an adult the right to do that, you know, to pursue their career professionally? So as I said, if I was a prep player that was a level of a no in the future, I would not play college basketball. And if I was a elite prep player for football, I'd consider alternative means as well. So thanks for listening to today's edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. This is Marcel Pertude once again. You can please hit me up on thesportsinquirer.net to read all of my articles and other analysis of sports. Hit me up on Twitter once again, Sports Inquirer. Just do a search. You'll see me there. And if you want to shoot me an email, just send me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. So thanks once again for listening to the podcast. Hope all of you have a good, outstanding, safe, and fun weekend. And until then, good fight, good night.